Now we're going to talk about men, women, and relationships, focusing more on the man's aspect of it. Generally, we have found that when it comes to relationships, in the usual traditional manner, in the traditional man-woman relationship, that the culture has kind of as its ongoing style, you might say, women are the ones that generally pay more attention to the relationship, to working on a relationship, as they use that term. Let's work on our relationship. Well, generally, men are, as you heard pointed out in the first third, men are quite afraid to work on a relationship because it should be already perfect, because they should have already know how to do this relationship thing. And generally, men don't want to admit error. They don't want to admit that maybe they don't know something. Generally, the traditional male chauvinist viewpoint is, if I don't know it, then it's not worth knowing. All right? You know, you see that in science, all right, or in medicine, right? Well, you know, we don't know very much about that nutrition thing, so as the doctor, but, you know, if it works for you, fine, go ahead. But we don't think that that has any bearing on your disease or your cure at all. You know, it's just because I don't know it, it's not worth knowing about. It's not of any importance. It's not of any significance. So the man has been trained that he's got to keep his ego facade intact. He's got to look composed and in charge. And in the pecking order system, a man is expected to be in charge of the little woman. All right? He's supposed to be the strong, silent type or whatever. And it's very important that he not be henpecked, okay? Because that puts him lower down on the pecking order. Because if a woman is higher than he is, in other words, she has more power, more dominance, then that's destructive to his place in the pecking order, since women are below the pecking order. For a man to be below a woman is humiliating. Now, we understand that a spiritual sensitive man understands that this is not true. But the subconscious mind is that part that was imprinted with all these attitudes during adolescence, when what was being manly, and how you had to be arrogant, and how you had to be kind of uncaring, and how you had to be the white knight, the perfect gentleman, or the perfect man, and never have a flaw, never have a mistake. That energy, that frequency is still in the psyche. So a man looks at, okay, hey, let's have a discussion about our relationship. Let's talk about the relationship. The man says, oh no, she's going to point out all my flaws. She's going to go digging in my wounds. She's going to go and hurt me. She's going, and I'm going to feel like I've disappointed her. And if I disappoint her, then it's all over. I'm crushed. I'm a loser. Then how could she love me if I'm not the composed gentleman, the white knight, the strong one? And often in the traditional relationship, the wooing period, where the man and the woman date and get to, you know, get set up for the marriage, the man makes all sorts of promises. You know, when, you know, we'll do this and we'll do that and I'll support you on this and da 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 da. And he gives her all sorts of promises. And she goes, oh wow, she just swoons with this idea of being supported and loved and everything's going to be wonderful. But when it comes down to saying, okay, now you said we were going to do this. Well, sorry, I don't think we can afford that right now. And the guy goes into shame. He's embarrassed. Oh, he made a promise, and now he's disappointing her. And this pulls up the whole memory in the subconscious mind, not in the conscious awareness, but in the subconscious mind. That emotion that he felt when his mother looked at him with disappointment about something. When she was disappointed in his behavior and something that he did and how bad he felt about himself, how he hung his head in shame. And he made a promise to himself that he was going to do better. He was going to do better so that she would never be disappointed in him. So a man looks upon a discussion about the relationship with tremendous trepidation. The woman has more social verbal skills, so she's going to be much more precise about what she doesn't like or wants or needs, because he's been basically tuning it out. It's too painful to go deep in there. And to feel need? Oh gosh, no, that's a weak place. To need somebody? To need something? And to ask for something? Oh no, no. That's a weak place. I've got to be the strong one. I'm the man. She's got to do the laundry. I'll take out the garbage. So, in a sense, the guy tries to look at a relationship by finding the rules. After all, it works in sports, doesn't it? You know, foul play, and you get to replay this, and these are points, you know? And in a sense, this gets transferred onto the relationship. But the fear of actually looking at the inner stuff is very difficult for a man. It's painful. It's scary. Very few men realize that that resonance of that old wound is no longer applicable, that it doesn't even need to be there. It's been so long since he's been spending his energy hiding and covering it up that he's going to feel totally inadequate in discussing anything that may bring up his inadequacy. So basically, as the old saying goes, or the slogan goes, you know, men will talk to women in order to have sex with them, and women will have sex with men in order to talk with them. That's the way it kind of divides out. Now, this doesn't apply across the board to everyone. But men who are courageous, who begin to realize a spiritual calling, a sense of their own greatness that's not having anything to do with ego, will want to have a beautiful, loving, sharing relationship. And they will open up and they will become courageous. But there are certain places they refuse to go. It's just too painful. And the shame place is that place. So in relationships, men are at a tremendous disadvantage because of their training. The training to ignore certain signals, to ignore their own emotions. So talking about them is an awkward place. So what happens is generally that if a woman brings up a topic that needs work, then the man sees that it's like that honey-do list, right? Please, honey, do this, honey, do that. He sees it as a demand, as a pressure, as a risk. And he doesn't want to disappoint her, so he's going to do anything that he can to avoid her displeasure. Now, this is something that in our discussion with Daniel came up, where Daniel explained to us, and he's going to give you more feedback about this later. is that the motivation is to avoid her disappointment, not necessarily to please her, but just to avoid the pain. Right? And so, as a result, he will do anything, and he will prioritize any method possible to avoid digging into that painful place, touching the wound, touching the shame. And so it becomes one of these baffling things that women come and ask us about. We have had so many women talk to us about, what's going on? Why do my men act like this? They are so hostile and defensive. And they're such nice guys. And then I just get into a topic and all of a sudden they just blow up and they get all upset. And there's just no talking with them, no communication with them. And then they hurt me and they push me away and they run away. What's going on? Frankly, men see that touching that wound means survival is threatened. Now, physical survival isn't threatened, but the emotional survival of adolescence is threatened. That's where you learn to put on your wall. All of you, men and women, put up your facade. Be on good behavior with each other. But that only lasts so long. In a real, true relationship, those walls have to come down. You have to create safety in a relationship. And this is the core place where that safety is most difficult to find. As long as there is shame, there can never be safety. Shame is antagonistic to safety and trust. Because frankly, you don't trust yourself as long as you have that under there. You don't trust that you're going to appear together and on top of things and knowing everything that you need to know and be perfect. You don't trust it. You think you're going to flub up any time. And any chance you get, you're going to push the woman away, create distance, get angry, get hostile, get threatening, shut down, run away, whatever you need to do so you don't go there. Well, dear ones, it's time to let there go, so that you can be free to be yourself. Because as long as you're afraid of going to that place of shame, a place where women are almost comfortable being. After all, when women come into the family, it's, oh great, it's a girl. Okay, next. If girls are not a value to the pecking order of the father or of the family, whereas boys are. Girls come in feeling somehow second-class citizens. It's an energetic thing. Shame is a shame of being, that somehow or another a girl is not loving or caring or supportive or nurturing or good enough. She's not pretty enough. She's not good enough. She's not charming enough. She's not sweet enough. She's not kind enough. She's not whatever. And she takes that as with herself. So a woman is generally already has her shame. So when a man blows up at her and blames her for his upset, woman, you're too demanding. Get off my case. Give me some space. The woman says, oh, I messed up again. I did it wrong. I've said something wrong. What did I say wrong? Just go away. I don't want to talk about it. So it's almost a natural place for a woman to go thinking she made the error, she made the mistake. And now she's got to work hard at it and fix it. Because after all, fixing the relationship is the woman's job. Now we're talking about a traditional relationship, and we understand that a man on a spiritual path is seeking the untraditional, seeking the spiritual, seeking a relationship that's beyond those traditional patterns. But to free a man, for a man to free himself, he must stop taking everything personally. he must stop taking it personally. Anything that she says, if she's saying, I don't like what you do here, he's got to not take that personally. He's got to objectify the behavior rather than saying, uh-oh, she's going to go digging around and find my shame spot and dig a knife in and twist it in me. I've got to put my walls up. I've got to put my dukes up. I've got to defend myself. I've got to put up a shield. I've got to get my sword out. I got to make sure that she doesn't get close to that spot. So not taking it personally is a big, big piece. And it's harder for a man to do that than a woman. A woman will seek advice. And actually, we've talked to many women privately when they've complained about their relationship and pointed out that the man goes into shame and not to take his blow up, not to take his hostility personally. The problem is that women learn to silence themselves, at least initially in a relationship, because they realize that if they keep saying stuff, it's going to make him even more volatile. Because what he needs is for to get a certain space so he can go and kind of get himself put back together and so that he seems like, so he has his facade back on, because the threat is that the facade has been taken down or that she's going beyond or behind the facade and he can't let that happen. So the woman self-silences. She shuts up. She says, okay, I'll give him space. And the problem with this, though, is that she thinks she's done something wrong. She doesn't know what she did to create the problem. But the hostility is hurtful and painful for her. His pushing her away or creating distance or not talking is like a rejection. And she takes it inside because she doesn't express it. She doesn't get any hostility out. Boys are always encouraged to be hostile. They can be hostile and angry and whatever, but girls, anger, If you get angry and you're a girl, then, you know, nobody's going to ever love you. So the woman self-silences, shuts herself down, and this takes the pain into her. This takes the responsibility, the burden, the pressure of the relationship into her. And it's one of the reasons why when they did research of married couples and so on, they found that women who self-silence in the relationship so that they don't get their men even more riled up or anxious or agitated will tend to get sick. Because women take it into their body and it messes up their body. They gain weight. Their metabolism gets wacky. Their hormones get off. They get sick. Anger, unexpressed for years and years and years, and frustrations not dealt with powerlessness and rage, will turn into viruses, cancer, heart disease, you name it. Marriage is really good for men. Men who are married are healthier than single men. But the same is not true for women. So what we want to emphasize for women is that it is not appropriate to self-silence. You need to deal with it. You need to deal with the emotion of it. But you do need to understand that when a man gets really upset, pushes you away, do not take it personally. He's frightened. He's afraid he's going to lose control. This is the foundation of most of the relationship problems that cause divorces and separations. Part of it is that the man wants to please the woman initially. And then later on, he just wants to keep her from being too unhappy with him. And in that process, he makes her mother, and he becomes little boy. And so if she's unhappy with him and disappointed with him, he goes into shame, just like a little boy. He hangs his head. You can see it sometimes with men that they will tilt their head down. Their features will get a bit reddish and ruddy. It's almost as if their whole body becomes kind of angular and twisted. Sometimes they kind of shake a little bit. They sink their chest in a bit. You can see it in their body posture. A man who carries too much shame will hold this body posture. A body posture that you see in lots of homeless men. They're bent over, sunken chests, ashamed of themselves, at the bottom of the pecking order, dirty on the street. Their shame, their humiliation showing in their body position. But you'll see a man, doesn't matter how much he's worth money-wise, will go right into that same position. Women, pay attention to that. Have compassion. There's a wound in there you're not even aware of. And men, if a woman complains, if she seems to be disappointed, do not make that promise that you're going to not disappoint her again. You're setting yourself up for failure. You're setting yourself up to disappoint her again. The same scenario will get repeated endlessly. Now, other factors that show up here is that there's definitions that need to be made and the negotiations that need to be made. And a man needs to learn how to do that. And a woman needs to learn how not to criticize a man. And a man needs to learn how not to react and overreact and take everything personally to a woman and assume that she's attacking him when she is not. Sometimes when women seek information from the man, he gets defensive thinking she is attacking. She's digging in there, the 20 questions, she's grilling him to find his weakness and destroy him. No. She's trying to seek out what it is exactly that she did wrong so she can do it right and make the relationship work. You see, if men and women could understand each other, it's part of the reason why that book, what is it, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, was so successful. It was a kind of a translation Bible for men and women's typical jargon. It says, okay, the man says blah, 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 blah. Here's what he means, right? And the woman says blah, 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 blah. Here's what she means. Unfortunately, that book didn't go far enough to tell you, well, now what do you do? Now that you know, what do you do about it? The healing of the shame is the critical piece so that a man can be free to feel, to admit error if there is a need for that without going into failure and shame. And if he can do that, then he can renegotiate something better. He can express himself without just kind of blowing. Because sometimes men have this thing where they seethe and shut down in shame, but after a certain number of times, the woman says something, it goes over some invisible line, and he blows. And then it all comes dumping out. So it's one thing that's really important in a relationship is that you don't, besides defining stuff and negotiating, you got to process your stuff and not to bring up problems and what the other one did wrong weeks ago. It's got to stay current. Okay? And one of the things that happens is that if you are in an argument, it's going to end up being who's right and who's wrong. And that never works. Ever. The channel and Daniel, would have arguments, and they'd go through this whole same thing. And it'd be so totally unsatisfying for both of them. And once they'd cooled down, and once they'd kind of gotten some distance and thought about it, you know, later that day or the next day or something, they'd get together and they'd kind of go over the argument and the issues. And they discovered in this argument, they discovered that they were fighting for right and wrong. They were fighting for their self-images of being smart. They were fighting for a sense of order that they thought would make them feel safe. And then they realized that they had not given each other impact. They had not really listened. They hadn't really heard each other. They were just fighting. And very often the man would create such a stir that when they really got over that line, and by the way, even the man didn't know where the line was. So women, don't ask, okay, how do you, you know, tell me before you hit go over the line? Because the guy doesn't know where that line is. He just knows at some point he freaks out and then he has to do his reaction thing. One of the techniques a man uses to deflect attention on his wound is to blame the woman. And so then it becomes about him, how he's unjustly put upon, unjustly burdened, and it's really her fault. So the argument then ends up who's right and who's wrong. And this never gets anywhere. So the channel and Daniel got together and would dismantle it and take it all apart and figure out what really happened. And then they would listen to each other. And they would tell what they really felt and what was really going on and what they realized about it. And as they did that, they both began to see each other's point of view. And as soon as they saw each other's point of view, they said, oh, that's fine too. So sometimes when they had a big disagreement, they would end up saying, okay, we'll go with yours. And I'll go with yours. And the other one would say, well, I'll go with yours. Then they had a dilemma. Okay, now which one are we going to do? You know, because they began to realize that they were, when they could see through the other person's eyes, then it was safe. It was all safe. It was all loving. And there would be this incredible release and surge of love and intimacy and caring that was wondrous for both. We wish that for everyone, that they can have it without having to go through the pain of it and then later on to have to do all the work and figure it out. Why not do it right there in the moment? You see? See, that's why we want to talk about it, so that we can put it forward to you, so you can think about what is the argument? What's the problem in the relationship that always comes up between a man and a woman? And it's this. Without shame, what could it be? All right.
Well, you said a lot of the things I was going to say, so.
Oh.
Well, that's okay.
All right. Well, let's look at the list here and see if there's anything anything we missed, okay?
Yeah,
how about assumptions?
Yes, yes.
All right?
So,
judgments and
anyway,
assumptions.
Basically, what I wanted to speak about was my involvement in our arguments. My involvement in our arguments. And from the point of view that as the man, I was going to be the white knight and make everything right for the little woman, there were certain moments when these expectations, mostly placed on myself, by myself, for myself, were not met. So if Ginger came and said, you know, this isn't working well in my life, or she'd have something that she would want me to do, or there were moments like that as well when she was displeased with something that I did. All of a sudden, there was this like defensiveness that came up. And indeed, there was a line. And if I got to be too close to that line, or if we stepped over, my defensiveness was to push her away. Even though I had this delusional self-image of being a very kind and loving person, always helpful for everybody, and going out there on a limb to make everything right, when push came to shove and this line would be crossed, my barbs would come out and I would become angry and vicious. I would become hurtful to my partner. All really from my point of view to defend myself from not showing that deep pain and weakness that was inside. You see, being intimate in a relationship is a two-edged sword. Yes, you want to be loving and you want to belong and you want to have a companion in your life and share and do these things. But if you get too close, then God forbid, they may actually see the vulnerability and the pain and the wretchedness that is deep inside, hidden in you. So,
and then they wouldn't love you.
That's right. So, or freak out. Because, well, if he's so defective, how can he take care of me? So sometimes men cannot show that either, because their women would freak out that they would not be supported. Because after all, a wretched guy like him, he can't take care of me. So this whole little play of how close can we get is all buried, or it's all revealed, sorry, by this fact that there is this pain deep inside that at no cost, and in my book, this is the number one rule in the man code, is never ever see them, let them see your weak spot inside. So when in our arguments there'd be a circumstance whereby that weak spot could be revealed, I would go into defensiveness. And you know, they say sometimes in the military, an attack is your best defense. That's what I would do. My barbs would come out, and I would say vicious, vicious things at her.
Well, it'd be a tit-for-tat kind of thing.
Yes, indeed.
I say, well, you know, you're saying this about me, but about you. You know, you have even a worse flaw. You know.
So, what happened originally, in my not becoming, being interactive with my peers and being kind of non-social, is I never learned my verbal skills. And because I didn't have my verbal skills, they didn't get developed. And so part of my brain, which houses those verbal skills, actually went to sleep. I'm now through arduous trial and error trying to be able to express myself again. But in those days, the only time when I was actually able to express myself was when I'd be angry. When I was angry, there'd be so much internal energy that finally all those things that I never would speak about would come to the surface. So in our arguments, I would bring up stuff that I had withheld and held back or was too afraid to express. Because as I mentioned earlier, I was deadly afraid of confrontation. And it would all come spewing out and festering. And then it was like Galexis said, it all turned into a matter of who was right and who was wrong and making your point. And so we'd holler and scream at each other, actually me more at her, because she was not really the hollering type. And finally, I'd get excited and I could get some anger off my chest. And of course, it would be all directed at her. And also, I knew that she was kind of shying away from, she was very sensitive to loud noises. So if I really wanted to push her away, all I'd have to raise my voice a few more notches and a few more notches and a few more notches. And I can bellow. I can tell you that. I can really holler loud. And so the argument would play out. It'd be very dissatisfying. None of us would really be heard in the moment of the argument, of what our point of view was. But for me, it was more important to be safe not to go and be vulnerable, to be protected, that this pain would not bubble up to the surface, because if it would, then I would, of course, see again how I failed in the communication, in being supportive of my wife. Normally then, after a while, either she would run away or I would run away, slam a door, and then as far as in either case, I would then go and lick my wounds. I would go into my cave and find my composure again and rationalize within myself how I was right all along. That was the basis of every one of our arguments, the underlying energy that flowed through it. However, we did do something that is very untypical of relationships. We had made that commitment when we got married, and that is that we would work out every disagreement to mutually satisfying solution. So once I got cooled down and she got cooled down, we would get together and we would debrief the argument. We would go over point by point, and the rest Galexis talked already to you about. So basically, I wanted to bring this up because ultimately I found that it was more important for me to be right than to be loving to my wife. And when you think of that, that is really a very, very poor place to be. And I know from experience and having spoken to a lot of other men that they are in a similar boat.
Yes, it's more important to be right than to be loved.
Yes. And, I mean, how sad is that?
Well, that's missing out on a great deal of life, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And so, of course, that's in essence, why there's so much difficulty with intimacy. And why the man would like to channel the intimacy in a relationship into sex. Whereas a woman wants to have intimacy also in communications, in verbal communications and in other ways, and spending time together, being close. Sometimes that would feel to a man kind of like being smothered, right?
Yes. Right? And it took me years to realize that even if Ginger would come up to me and say, you know, we had discussed I would do a project, something, you know, like change a light bulb or something like that. And the next day the light bulb wasn't changed, and she'd come to me, when are you going to change this light bulb? And for her, it was just a request. Well, you know, when is it going to happen? Maybe I want to read that evening and I want to know if there's going to be a light bulb there to read. And I saw it like, well, why haven't you changed this light bulb yet? When are you doing your job? And I saw it as a
You're criticism. Failing. You're failing.
That's right.
You're behind.
It, yes. And sure enough, another argument would ensue. So it's all a matter of attitude. And it took me, well, we're together 32 years. It took me like 25 of those to finally figure out that she truly had my best interest at heart. And just imagine, 25 years lost to always thinking that she was attacking me rather than being supportive. That's really sad and wasted time.
For both of you.
Yes. We lost a lot of intimacy during this period.
A lot of pain.
Yes, there was a lot of pain. And you know, when this continues and continues and never finds a resolution, trust gets eroded. Intimacy gets eroded. And after a while, all there's left is the arguing. And yeah, we're together because we're married and we have nowhere else to go. And then next step is divorce, separating, the tragedy of separation.
Yeah, and there are couples that are just housemates, you know. They're just like roommates. They kind of barely talk with each other anymore because every time they talk, it's friction, you know. So there are people who live in that kind of circumstance, kind of numbly, you know.
Yeah, we were going that way, too.
Yes, they were.
My wife and I, mm-hmm. we kind of, in our house in South Florida, we had this whole routine worked out. I'd get up early, she'd get up late. Then early I would go in the office, And then she would come, finally get up, and then she would come into the office, so I'd find something to do in the house. And then, of course, we'd get together for a meal, and that's about the only times we spent together. In the afternoon, sometimes we'd do a project, but the afternoon she would do something and I'd do something else. And in the evening, then she would go back because she loved the computer and writing, and I'd be sitting in front of the television. It's only when we kind of gave ourselves a swift kick in the butt and decided to travel the country, and we spent 11 months in our 400 square foot RV, that we were really in each other's face. And we had to deal with those issues, and we did. And through that, we were able to gain way, way, way more intimacy, more trust, more love, more satisfaction, and more depth in our relationship.
And a lot of healing for both of you.
Yes.
A lot of healing.
And now I know that she truly cares for me. She truly has my best interest at heart. And when she comes and she either asks me or criticizes me, I know that it is constructive and not destructive. Anyway, we'll talk about in the third session of what it really means to be free of that and how it played out.
Right, right. Well, you know, in your culture, the way you're trained to make evaluations of things is to hold judgments. And so you have opinions, which are basically judgments, which move into beliefs, which are judgments, and belief systems, which are systems of judgments. Right? And any time you make a judgment of another person, you limit what you can experience with that person. And this goes with even people you don't know. You see, if you, and of course, one of the ways of maintaining your place in the pecking order for men is essentially is judgment. You know, the ones who can judge others are a little higher up just because it's like a, you know, it's a, almost a military model, is that they have the power of discernment, and they've judged somebody. And so, in a sense, that's an attack. If you're being judged, you have to defend yourself. You have to explain yourself, which is the position of the inferior person. And so this is just tremendously integrated into the pecking order. And women have it too. Women can get into the kind of a righteous judgment about how immature men are, or something like that. And, you know, it can go both ways. And so the judgments that are made, you have to understand, are your hugest limitation from the get-go, because they obscure your capacity to see the other person for who they are, because you've made judgments of them. So you have an image of them. And you have an image of them that is built from your image of other people who are in the same category, i.e. for women, you know, you talk about, well, men, and they go, yeah, men, right? You know what that means, right? Men all together as a group, well, they suck, right? You know, and men say, well, women, you can't live with them, you can't live without them. You know what that means? Women as a group, oh man, they're all high maintenance. They're all hard to deal with. Oh my God. Oh, what a trip. But you gotta go there. Gotta put up with it. If you want a marriage, if you want a woman, if you want whatever. Now we want to point out that these dynamics are also found in gay and lesbian relationships. But they're not generally as precisely delineated or divided along the male and female lines, as the regular consensus straight culture traditional marriage pattern would be. At least they have a certain amount of flexibility, but there also are their judgments too, and there's also their sense of defining roles, and whoever is the sensitive one and who is the one that tends to accept the shame more easily, and so on. They will play these dynamics out in their own way. So it's not like anybody gets free of this stuff. This is stuff that's dumped onto everyone. And so every relationship. And there's a whole bunch of people who basically just say, oh, well, screw it. Screw relationships. I don't want a relationship. It's just too much hassle. It's too much trouble. And both sexes will make a statement like that. And they will end up being pretty much alone and so on. Now, after a relationship ends, a woman, a man will basically rationalize it, just like Daniel was talking about, how he'd go into his little cave and he'd lick his wound and all that kind of stuff. And he would basically come to the idea that, you know, I was right to begin with, and she's just mistaken, and she's just messed up, and so on. And, okay, judgment's made. It's all been figured out, nailed down. Okay, I'm okay now. I can put my facade back on, and I can go out there and face the world again. Both men and women do that after relationships. And the sad thing is you don't really learn how to live fully and joyously in a relationship when you're single. It's really hard to do. Right? It's like, can you learn swimming on dry land? Well, you can learn the theories about it. You can learn, okay, here, you're going to have to move your arms this way, and you're going to have to move your head in such a way to breathe and so on. But do you really understand how to do it until you actually get into the water? So we recommend that everyone, now don't jump into commitment and stuff. That's all part of that whole programming thing that you got into in adolescence and young adulthood. No, don't go make commitments. Just be present in a relationship. Have relationships. Explore them. Date. Play. If you're not in a marriage or not in a committed relationship already, just get to know people. Any person will do, actually. You don't even have to go deal with a person of the opposite sex, but just practice being in a relationship and experiencing your awareness, being present. Learn how to take judgments and assumptions off the person. Learn how not to take anything personally that they should say. If they really, really, really knew you, and then they said something mean, yeah, maybe then you could take it personally, because they really knew you. But frankly, most people have facades on, good behavior on, and it's really difficult to truly know each other. So don't take it personally. And let yourself be present. Let yourself feel free to express yourself. Now, if you have something to express, our recommendation is not to express a judgment. If you express a judgment, what do you expect the other person to respond with? Ta-da! Another judgment. What do you expect will happen if you judge somebody or you critique somebody with a judgmental orientation or attitude? You can expect a defense or an attack. You can expect a fight, a resistance. You can expect more separation between you and the other. So if you have something to say, you're angry at another person, you need to first think, what are you really angry about? What are you really frustrated about? And get really clear first before you go talk to them. Generally, the amount of time it takes for you to really figure it out, you'll cool down a bit. Another thing is to recognize that the other person doesn't feel necessarily safe. And you don't feel safe. So always watch that. Always make an attempt to give that other person a safe space to be themselves. If you want that person to do certain things, look a certain way, act a certain way, you're wanting to control them. You want them to conform to an image that you hold of them that is pleasing to you and that would maintain your sense of order and security. Security as opposed to safety. That is your protection, so that you wouldn't have to deal with chaos. You wouldn't have to deal with the unknown. It'd all be predictable. Well, any of you who've been in predictable relationships know they're no fun. Because generally predictable relationships are shut down relationships. People are like a car that's only running on two cylinders, right? A predictable relationship, a routine relationship, is like running on two cylinders. It's just not really functioning well. If you want something that's really juicy and you want to be really happy, you've got to treasure, love, and value yourself and give the other person that treasure, love, and value as well. All right. How much more time do we have in this segment?
25.
All right. Perfect.
It's perfect indeed.
All right. So we're going to do another process. Ta-da! And in this process, we're going to release some of this pain and some of this shame out of relationships. Now, we want you to recognize that your relationship with yourself is probably the most important. Because the other, whoever it is that is your other, is a reflection where it will reflect you back to you. You can't help it. So you want to be safe being you. Then you can be big enough, free enough, bright enough, loving enough, strong enough to allow someone else to come close to you. So get yourself in a place that's comfortable. And close your eyes. Again, we're not going to go and do a deep relaxation process of any sort. This is an awareness process. We would suggest that in this quiet space, behind closed lids, think about what your image of yourself is. Have you judged yourself? What is your weakness? What are your flaws that you may have? And what riles you the most about what other people do? What irritates you the most? The thing that you say, well, I just hate it, you know, when my mate, my partner does blank, fill in the blank. Think about relationships you've had. Or a relationship you currently have. What is the most aggravating thing? What is the thing that seems to cause the most distress or the most frustration for you? There is no relationship that is perfectly harmonious and smooth. So first, get rid of that idea that you need to have a relationship like that. But there's never a rough word, never the volume raised of your voice. And think about what is it in your relationship or in a relationship that you've had which triggers more of that anger, voice raising, argument, right versus wrong thing. What's your role in it? So you see, it takes two to tango. It takes two people to create an argument. You may be very clear about what the other person's side is. You've probably analyzed it, rationalized it. But what is yours? How do you hold an energy an attitude, an orientation that really aggravates somebody else. And if they respond with agitation, what do you do? How do you feel? How do you respond? Do you respond with righteous indignation? Or do you turn an attack on, well, you know, it's your problem. What's your problem? So look at your issue in relationship. Have you judged yourself for this? Or have you rationalized it as being necessary for your survival in a tough world? Isn't it about time to let all this judgment go? As yourself, at others? Isn't it about time to go to a deeper level of safety, love, and intimacy? First with yourself, to appreciate, love you, and value you. And from there, you'll know how to love and value another. So just imagine now, if you would, that the you that you're thinking about here is the you that has this body, is living this physical life. But this you is only part of you. This is just a piece of you that came to experience physical plane existence. This consciousness that you have on your daily level is only a small piece of you. It's all that you can do in a physical plane environment with its limitation of dimensions. Imagine there is a part of you that knows that you're divine, that can unconditionally love. There is no conditions whatsoever on loving you or any other. There is a greater aspect of you with more grandeur, with more light, free, empowered, loving, totally safe in who they are. This greater you, your higher self, or you, the greater you. Imagine now that you can meet a personification of the greater you, who is so much more than you, so much brighter, so much more loving, so much more empowered, so much more radiant and divine. The you that's not limited by physical plane dimensions or by physical body. Just imagine this you showing up, starting in a big cloud of light, an effulgent, glowing, radiant cloud of light coming closer to you. The light's very, very bright. You see within this light a figure. And you know that this is you. Let yourself discern this figure. Let this figure perhaps reveal himself or herself. May not look like you at all. You're only one lifetime out of many. There are many forms. This one comes from beyond form and is taking on a form that may not resemble your form here. It actually may not even be the same gender as you. Do not be concerned about that. That's superficial. But let this greater you, the one that's beyond all your lifetimes, who is connected directly to God, Goddess, all that is, let this one appear to you, come to you. Let this one stand before you. Now, if you've ever looked in your mirror at yourself and looked into your eyes, there's a certain energy about your eyes, a certain cast to your eyes. They say eyes are the windows of the soul. There's something about your eyes that are unique. And it's not just physical. There's something about the energy in your eyes. Let this one, this greater you, show their eyes. And their eyes look like your eyes. They may not be the same color. Your eyes may be blue and theirs brown, or yours may be brown and theirs blue. But they have that same vibration, that same luminescence. Look into these eyes. See and sense that you that is there, that is greater, a you that is loving far more than you're capable of, a you that is accepting you unconditionally, just the way you are. You don't need to do any behavioral changes. You don't need to do any self-fixing. You're loved unconditionally, just the way you are. Just imagine. Just stretch a bit. Just sense the light coming from these eyes into yours, into the greater you, into the lesser you, the physical you. Let this light go into you deeper. And then notice that they have a form that they're using. Just notice, how tall are they? What gender? What are they wearing? Let them open their arms now in the gesture of love. The invitation to you. Feel yourself drawn to this one, to this greatness, to this light, to this love. Feel yourself pulled into them, into their embrace. Let them wrap their arms around you. Let them love you, hold you. Put your head on their shoulder now as they put their arms around you. Feel the warmth of their light, of their love. Hear them speak to you. Hear them tell you that they love you. I love you. Let yourself melt into them. Melt into the light, into the vibration of unconditional love. Let yourself feel the ultimate deep trust and safety. Feel that amazing, amazing freedom, sense of freedom and empowerment. Feel it. Just imagine it. Imagination, fifth dimension. Merge with them. Become one to the best that you can. Don't worry, you won't ever know fully, completely, while you're in a physical body, what it is to be your higher self or your greater self. So there's no way that you will get it fully just get what you can. Experience as much of the expansion that they have as you can. And as you merge with them and become one with them, feel your body filling up with them in their body. And look out their eyes now. Eyes of compassion and love, unconditional acceptance. Imagine. And now look through these eyes at your relationship or at a relationship that you've had or even a non-romantic relationship, a family member, a child or a parent or sibling, a relative, a friend, a partner in business. Look at those people in your life with absolute unconditional acceptance. Because you see, they are light beings too. And see, in a sense, just imagine, just notice all the suffering and struggle they go through, all the walls they build around themselves. Just notice all the fears that they hold, the wounds they carry, the concerns they have. Look at their need to maintain an ego facade, a facade of strength or power or protection or a facade of smartness and intelligence, a facade of bravado and courage that covers up that fragile inner part of them. And have compassion on them, knowing that this person that you are looking at is always going to try to appear worthwhile, valuable, and lovable. They may not have good tools to do that in an empowered, beautiful, and spiritual way, but they'll do it with whatever tools they picked up through their childhood and adolescence and adulthood. Forgive this one now. Just forgive them because they didn't really know what they were doing. If they turned their back on you or made life difficult for you, forgive them. They are in shame. They are suffering from the same old stuff that you have had to suffer through and making adjustments like you've been making. Maybe slightly different pattern, the other half of your pattern. Forgive them. Accept them. Understand them. And now in your imagination, go to them. From this vaulted perspective, as a light being, they may not see you, just imagine that you show up in a room and they're there doing whatever they do. And you just go up to them and love them. Put your arms of light around them. Accept them. Forgive them. Acknowledge them. Acknowledge their value, their worth as a light being. Their essence. Acknowledge your value, your light, and your essence. Feel the harmony. Feel the peace. It's okay. You're safe. Can you give yourself permission to go to this place in your relationships? Can you allow yourself to explore being this light being in a relationship? Not from a position of superiority to have compassion, because then they will pick it up as disdain or judgment. You're not more than they, but you're capable of seeing them for who they are and seeing yourself for who you are. Yes, you've carried around wounds, as they have. But you're okay. You're a spiritual being, and so are they. Accept the human parts. And recognize that if you can hold this awareness, you can create an extraordinarily joyous, loving experience. Use your imagination. How would you have a discussion or a disagreement from this place? Yes, you could still have a disagreement as two light beings, but the resolution of it would be quite different, perhaps, than what it has been. And now bring yourself back. And as you do, ask yourself, can I give myself permission to be empowered in a relationship? Loving in a relationship? Free to be me? In a relationship, and trusting myself and trusting the divine plan, knowing that I am safe. This reality around me is my illusion, my playground, and I will create love and companionship there. It was said that God said, I'm lonely, I'd like to create some humans to play with. Yes, you, the God within you, created relationships to play with. Your opportunity to love unconditionally. But with good tools of discussion and action. All right, so letting yourself open your eyes and come back. Giving yourself permission now. To approach relationships from a place without shame. Oh yeah, when they say, oh, he's shameless, means like he is not responsible for the impact he has on others. No, you are responsible for the impact you have on others, but you're not here to fix anyone's life. You're not here to make them happy. You're here to shine your light from your center of joy. And from there, you can negotiate love and all sorts of wonderful adventures and experiences of intimacy and depth and meaning. You are empowered. It's your choice. All right, we're going to have another break. And so we'll talk with you again about what the new pattern is. The post-shame pattern for the masculine energy. Farewell for now.